From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network. So happy to be here as we are getting closer. We're getting closer to that magical time here in Michigan that we call hunting season. Fishing season, pretty much year-round. We've been talking a lot about fishing this year, but we are getting back to talking about hunting season, September 15th, not that far off in the distance, with small game season. And I want to quickly remind you that Wild Michigan is being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Lucky-buck.com is where you can go. And I want to commend Abe and the guys over there at Lucky Buck for being on top of the rules and regulation changes that go on, not only in Michigan, but throughout the course of the U.S., and where you can use Lucky Buck, how you can use it, and when you can use it, all those great things. And also, another great Michigan company joining us on board as of last week is our good friend Doug Roberts and Karen Roberts and all the gang over at Conquest Sense. And they are ATA approved, because if you are buying anything for scents that contain actual deer urine in them, it has to be approved by the ATA. Conquest Sense are ATA approved. Look for that ATA checkmark sticker on not only Conquest Sense, but anything you choose to buy, and know that you are using the right stuff here in Michigan. So we are going to go to the Lucky Buck Hotline right now with our good friend Al Stewart, Upland Game Bird Specialist for the Michigan DNR. And Al, I've always been a big fan of small game in Michigan. And Upland Game Birds still, I mean, Michigan is still a great place for Upland Game, like grouse, woodcock, which we are, very well known for, but still a lot of people don't hunt those two species in particular.
Well, you know, the governor always asks us, what are you world-class at? And actually, we're world-class at, with American woodcock. We're number one in the world for American woodcock harvest. We're one of the top production states because our foresters and our biologists, actively manage for young forests for grouse and woodcock. We're number two or three in the nation for rough grouse harvest. And Outdoor Life listed us as in the top 10 for wild pheasant harvest. And actually, we're probably seventh in the country for wild pheasant harvest. So, between things like the Michigan Pheasant Restoration Initiative, the GEMS, the Grouse Enhanced Management Sites, or turkey tracks for turkeys, and, the Woodcock Young Forest Initiative. We've got a lot of things going on in Michigan, and we're just fortunate. Like I said, game birds are great species, and the people that are involved with them, why I like it so much is the people that are actively pursue upland game birds, they're some of the first things out of their mouth when we work together as partners is, how can I help and what can we do for habitat? They're really focused on habitat, and that's great because, Wildlife Division of DNR, we're really focused on habitat and working with people and partners to create it. So, it's the perfect match, as they say, and we've been, real fortunate to go that line.
Al, I want to talk about habitat for a second, because in the 50s and 60s, Michigan was we were like tops. When it comes to pheasant hunting. But then, we've seen populations decline, and we haven't seen, things kind of leveled out tremendously, the 30 years after the fact. And we are now seeing kind of an uptick, like you said, in the wild pheasant population, in numbers harvested. But what happened to that lull? I mean, what caused that whole lull with Michigan pheasant hunting?
Yeah, well, as they say, life changed. And, we've gone from, most of the people in Michigan being having a rural association rather than an urban or city association. We've seen farms go from an 80-acre family farm where you had some cows, some chickens, you basically subsisted off that farm. I mean, you were able to make a living there. You grew some small crops, some corn, to an agricultural system that was much bigger and broader, where those small family farms have gone by the wayside, and you know we're now more actively agriculturally oriented, and you know again some of the top in the country, some of the top in the world for our production. But in doing that, those small farms are no longer in existence, and you become specialized to be successful in the global market. And so, and then the other part is, you know, in the days when there were lots of pheasants, there were not necessarily lots of people.
Right.
And so people lived in the cities or they lived in the country. But now we have the city, Grand Rapids, Detroit, but then that's expanded all the way out into the country, and we call those urban areas. So in the days of pheasants, you know, like I said, people were grazing cows, they were grazing horses. Mm-hmm. You know, there was just the fence rows were fences. Today, if you ask someone, well, define a fence row, well, a fence row is where there are trees, you know, growing.
Right, right.
That's not what a fence row was. A fence row was a fence to keep a cow or a horse or some animal, you know, from the pasture, from going from the pasture into the oats or corn that you were growing there, or even the alfalfa field. So those alfalfa fields were where pheasants nested. And, you know, in those days you could get maybe one crop of hay. I mean, I was raised on a farm. Mm-hmm. You got two crops of hay in a, you know, a summer. Boy, that was, you know, as I said, the second cutting.
Right.
That was exceptional. But now you raise alfalfa and you may have, you know, four or five cuttings of alfalfa, which pheasants like to nest in alfalfa, but they still have to have, you know, 15 days to lay a dozen eggs. They still have to have, you know, 26 a month of undisturbed time to sit on those eggs and hatch them, and then mm-hmm. have a place where there are insects that the chicks feed on after they hatch.
Right.
So, you know, in today's way of doing business, it's unique that you have that length of time in prime habitat. The other thing is, there's a lot of things that we still don't know about pheasants, but there's a couple we know. And those couple are, number one is, asphalt does not produce a lot of pheasants.
Yeah, no, not so much.
So that's, you know, so that's really what's happening. And to be, you know, fully informed, is Michigan is not the only state that's, you know, seen declines in pheasants. It's
right.
happened across the country. You know, the stronghold that we talk about, South Dakota, you know, they've seen certainly great ups and downs. Iowa in particular has seen huge, you know, variations in their mm-hmm. pheasant population. So, you know, the days where Michigan had lots of pheasants and they were, you know, everywhere, there was habitat everywhere. So we know good habitat provides pheasants. And so today, you can go into those places where we're, you know, part of the Pheasant Initiative, the Michigan Pheasant Initiative that we're doing with, you know, many partners, including Pheasants Forever. When you go to a place where there's pheasant habitat, there are pheasants in many cases.
Sure.
So we just need to expand that more and have more pheasant habitat. And that's, you know, that's what the soil conservation districts are trying to help us with. That's what, you know, you hear about the Farm Bill programs. You know, the Farm Bill programs help us put in habitat, say along county drains or mm-hmm. areas like that, so that we don't lose our topsoil, these filter strips that go along through there or other habitat. And so clean water is important to everyone. So, and then habitat for pheasants is, I mean, we really think it's important, but you know, the rest of the world is, they'd rather have really clean water, you know, so,
yeah. So damn those so people
it's, you
anyway.
Know, again, it's this huge partnership that works if we can install it in the right places. And that's why at a national level, you hear about the farm bills.
Okay.
Al. As something very key.
All right, man. We're going to talk more with Al Stewart here in a couple of minutes. Appreciate you joining us. We are Wild Michigan, being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Check them out online, conquestsense.com.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts.
all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, lucky-buck.com. Also, our friends at ConquestScents.com. Great scents in a stick, in a liquid form, VS1, and the Evercalm. Look for both of those on your shelf. ATA-approved scents here, made right here in Michigan. I'm going to go back to our upland game bird specialist, Al Stewart, with the Michigan DNR. A world-renowned upland game bird specialist, and we'll get to that part in a couple of minutes. We've always known that about Al, but something really cool happened recently, and we want to share that. But first, we were talking about grouse hunting, Al, and I read something about grouse hunting and West Nile virus, and somehow they just seem worlds apart, but apparently not.
Yeah, so West Nile virus is the virus that's just came into this country, back in 1999, 2000, first came into the Michigan in 2001. The first grouse, actually, we ever had identified with a positive was in 2002. And we've never had another one identified from then until last year when we had 12 identified as positives. The virus is spread by mosquitoes, so and at this point we really have no idea what impact West Nile virus has on ruffed grouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been 250 different species of animals that had have been identified with positives for West Nile virus. It's found in every county in the state, so. But recently, Pennsylvania has been doing some work with it and found that grouse that were in poor habitat had a greater chance of coming down with West Nile virus than woodcock in or grouse in poorer habitats. And then, in the Upper Great Lakes, we're looking at it. So Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota. We're interested in seeing what's going on, particularly with rough grouse, but all species. So, if you find a sick bird, bring it into the local DNR office and have it sent to the wildlife pathology lab, whether it's a robin or, a rough grouse, let's say. But, again, it's transmitted by a mosquito. So, let's just say, the West Nile virus is severely impacting grouse. What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Because it's a mosquito. Since man has been on this planet, they've been trying to get rid of mosquitoes, and there are, harsher things like malaria where people have tried to, get rid of mosquitoes. So, I'm not sure what our, what is going to come out of all of this. Mm-hmm. What I do know is that it becomes important that we have the very best habitat on the landscape that we can provide for rough grouse, that early successional young forest, young aspen type habitat, so that birds don't get stressed, So it's like you or me. If we are really stressed and the flu is going through the area, we're more likely to get it than somebody who's at great, physical and, health conditions. So we want to do the very best we can for grouse and woodcock, and we'll see what happens with it. And so we're doing a study with three states, so that and Pennsylvania is part of this. So four, there's a larger group, but mm-hmm. in the Upper Great Lakes, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota are all doing a survey that is very identical in process and protocol, so that we can compare apples to apples, not apples to oranges. Sometimes it happens, when you do research against across multiple states. So in Michigan, we are looking to collect rough grouse this fall. We have four areas that we're really concentrating on, and And in the Upper Peninsula, those represent Dickinson, Iron, and Marquette, and Chippewa, Luce, and Mackinac counties. And in the Lower Peninsula, it's Alpena, Montmorency, Presque Isle, and Meskaki, Ogama, and Roscommon. And we hope to collect 100 grouse from each one of those areas for a total of 400 birds. And there are special kits that you have to get in order to, you know, be part of this. We're trying to, this is a kind of a little bit of a costly process to, you know, look at all these birds. Wisconsin and Minnesota are also looking at, you know, a large sample like this, and we'll be testing them the same way. So we're trying to focus on people who harvest, you know, like 10 or more grouse per year, if we can. Five or more, you know, works too. But we've got a lot of our kits out there right now with people from the Rough Grouse Society, some other folks that have contacted us that, you know, annually harvest a fair number of grouse, more than the average person. The average person harvests about half a grouse a year. So, so you and I are above that, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about me, but we're right.
So anyway, you know, the average person, you know, harvests half a grouse a year. So we need a whole grouse
for
the survey. So we're trying to, you know, like I said, work with people who are in places that, and they spend a lot of time at it to help us collect some birds. So the test involves is, if you harvest a grouse, you fillet the breast meat off and keep that for yourself. You put the bird in a plastic bag. Before you do that, you take like an ink blotter, or maybe more appropriate would be, you know, those little white tabs that you use for deer scents that you were talking about earlier, you know, that to help distribute the scent. It's kind of like that. Rather than absorb deer scent, it absorbs blood. So you shoot the grouse, you tap this on there, it absorbs some blood. You put that in a vial, and then you send all that information into the wildlife pathology lab, Julie Malotti, and then we'll process it and, you know, combine that with everybody else in the other states that's doing the work. And this is a 3-year project, so we'll get an idea of what's going on. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, we really care. We want to know what's going on, and so that we can, you know, at least be better advised on what's happening out there. But it's not just grouse. It's, like I said, a whole bunch of critters that have it.
Well, Al, I tell you what, man, I appreciate all the hard work you're doing. And unfortunately, we ran up against the clock for this segment. But I do want to catch up with you on this trip that you had. I'm just going to keep everybody in suspense. It was really cool, and he was acknowledged by somebody that the world over is known by. So we will get to that. Probably, Al, if you send me a picture, we'll share it on our Facebook page. You can find everything on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, our links to Facebook and everything else there as well. Al, thank you so much for your time and your hard work as the Upland Game Bird Specialist for the Michigan DNR. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Durant.
Absolutely. Coming up, we've got Bill Parker from Michigan Outdoor News yet to talk. Also, one of our favorite authors, Richard P. Smith, has a new book out. And we're going to talk about bear hunting here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
I still believe.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan Spirit of the Wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild!
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. So glad to have you along here this weekend on the Michigan Talk Network. Thanks to our good friend Al Stewart from the Michigan DNR, Upland Game Bird Specialist. And what we didn't get to with Al, I really wanted to share with you. Al was really recently over in the UK and as an Upland Game Bird Specialist, talking about woodcock, speaking on woodcock to a very royal audience over there. He actually had an opportunity to meet with Prince Charles briefly, as it usually is over there. But that's a conversation we will have at a future date and find out how the world is watching Michigan with our upland game bird species, especially woodcock, as we are number one in the world. Now, Wild Michigan being brought to you by our friends at Conquest Sense, conquestsense.com, great Michigan company, VS1, and of course, the Evercalm Scents in a stick or liquid form, plus some other great products, so make sure to check them out. And right now, our good friend and author, Richard P. Smith, joins us from his home up in the UP, getting ready for bear season here in Michigan. And there was the bear numbers, Richard. There was a study on bears and populations and whatnot, and those are out. And I didn't really get a good look at the numbers, but it seems that we still have a good, healthy bear population in the state, as we are still seeing them pop up in southern Michigan in places, or at least, central Michigan, a lot farther south than what we normally would see them. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, when you get one hit by a car in Grand Rapids or one spotted over here, in a little bit lower parts of Michigan, in the lower peninsula, is it population? Is it bears just roaming, looking for their own place? What's going on?
It's both, Duran. We have a growing bear population in Michigan, and the reason we have a growing bear population is bear licenses have been reduced since 2012. The quota of licenses has gone down dramatically. That's allowed the bear population to increase, and we have many more bears out there. And the bear population estimate from the DNR that you were referring to is at least a year out of date. The current estimate for Michigan is 14,000 adult bears. Those are bears that are a year and a half or year and three-quarter year old and older. It doesn't include cubs. If you included cubs in that number, we'd have over 20,000 bears in the state. And that estimate is effective on September 1, 2017. So we're at least a year behind because there's been a new batch of cubs born since then and new yearlings added to that population. So the DNR's population estimate is always a year or two behind.
That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of bears. In my opinion, it doesn't seem like it because of the square footage, but bear to habitat ratio, it seems like a lot.
It is. And as I said, the population is increasing. We have a number of females. Three cubs is not unusual. And I talked to someone recently who saw a female with four cubs, and some females have as many as five cubs.
Holy smokes. That's a lot of bear.
It is.
Now, I'm looking at the numbers now. When you said 14,000 adult black bear, and again, a year behind, almost 11,000 in the UP alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge amount of bear.
It is. And when you bring those numbers forward, consider how many we have this year. We probably have closer to 14,000 or 15,000 in the UP alone, adult bears, if you consider the current numbers rather than a year ago.
Now, I know from personal experience, bears are not one to really want to engage with the public, and you've always told me that the Western UP, Upper Peninsula, is probably the easier spot to buy a license, even though it's the farthest away. It's also some of the least populated in the state.
Right. And because it is farther from the Mackinac Bridge, where hunters from downstate would come, there's less competition for the tags over there, too.
Now, how does that affect growth? Because I know in Canada, when we hunt bear in Ontario, I mean, they're lousy with bears up there. And the size isn't what I've seen come out of, say, the northern lower peninsula here in Michigan.
Last year, Duran, I interviewed more hunters with Boone and Crockett class bears in the 500 to 600 pound range than I have for a long time. We have a lot of huge bears in Michigan, in the Lower Peninsula, as well as the UP.
Wow, that is, that's big. Because, look, I've been face-to-face with a bear at about 300 pounds, probably 12 to 15 yards away while he was on a bait pile and I was getting ready to pick up my bow.
Mm-hmm.
and I can't imagine had that been literally twice the size.
They're big.
Wow. I mean, is it just a lower pressure? It's got to be a lower pressure that they're getting that big.
Exactly. Because of the reduced license quota since 2012, we have more older bears in our population. One of the biggest bears that was taken in the Lower Peninsula last year was only 8 years old, and it was 500 to 600 pounds.
Wow. And you know, again, take into consideration, if you've never hunted Canada, anybody, I mean, the average bears that we're seeing are 3 to 5 that I've seen taken on the hunts that I've been on. But eight is like, you know, a grandfather bear in some of the places I've hunted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty incredible. We have bear season coming up, and I want to briefly plug our friends over at Mitchell State Park at the Carl T. Johnson Hunting and Fishing Education Center. Ed Shaw, Steve Berry, and all the gang over there, they put on a bear clinic for us a couple of years ago, and I was a member of one of those classes. And they put on a great educational seminar for all the things they do over there. But what I learned in bear class, even though I had hunted bear, was phenomenal. I mean, and still sticks with me today. And I really want to push people towards those you know, education seminars throughout the state that they're putting on.
Yeah, they're doing a good job in helping educating hunters. And there's a lot more first-time bear hunters than there are first-time deer hunters. And they're a totally different animal when it comes to hunting.
It is, and hunting with, you know, I see people hunt with dogs, and that to me is very different. I've never, you know, I mean, I've hunted birds with dogs, but bear is very different.
It is, and it can be extremely exciting, a lot more exciting, adrenaline pumping than hunting over bait.
I don't know. Again, my experience was pretty up close, and it was pretty exciting. I mean, I wasn't nervous at all because of all the great things I've learned from you, that I had a pretty good opportunity should this thing try and bluff, you know, or whatever else. But it worked out that he went the other way and I went up in the tree. It worked out well.
Right.
But dog, now the season with dogs runs a little bit different than regular season anyway, doesn't it?
It does in the Upper Peninsula. The opening day for bear season is in the UP is September 10th. And the first 5 days are bait only. Then starting on September 15th, it's legal to start hunting with dogs. In the Lower Peninsula, I think there's 1 day of bait hunting only, and then hounds start the second day.
Wow, they seem to rely on the dogs pretty much, quite a bit, rather.
Well, it is an effective way of hunting bears. Success with hounds, even though there's fewer hound hunters than bait hunters, their success rate is much higher.
Now, with the dogs, I understand the dogs tracking, but, you know, how does that end result come about with the dogs?
Well, usually a bear will either eventually climb a tree, or if it's a big bears had to have a tendency not to climb and to face the dogs and try and fight them off. They bay up on the ground. Then hunters have to sneak in close and try and get a shot at them on the ground. That's where the excitement level is really elevated.
Now it all makes sense.
because they're often bait in very thick habitat, and if a bear hears hunters approaching, they'll often break and run and stop again after a couple hundred yards. So it can take a while to get into a position for a shot. I interviewed a guy who took a huge bear, a Boone and Crockett bear in the Lower Peninsula. The chase lasted 8 to 9 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
They kept bumping the bear, and he finally had to crawl on his hands and knees to get into position. I think he was only 15 feet from the bear when he shot it.
All right, Richard P. Smith joining us here for Bear Excitement. We're going to talk about Great Michigan Deer Tales next on Wild Michigan.
Nick Munch of Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, buck knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, lucky-buck.com. And my apologies for not mentioning earlier the website for Richard P. Smith, the revamped website for he and his wife Lucy. RichardPSmith.com is where you can find all of his great books, his articles, and everything else. Make sure you check that website out. Richard's on our website at wildmichiganradio.com, and a link to RichardPSmith.com. Now, you have another book coming out, Great Michigan Deer Tales, Book 7, and you'll have this in time for the Woods and Waters weekend coming up?
Yes, indeed. My wife and I are picking it up later this week, just before the show starts, and that's the show will be the first place it'll be available for purchase.
Now, what is in this one? You've written so many great books, and you know, you've been noted for your work, and you know, walking with whitetails, and you know, field judging black bear and everything else. And what is in the Great Michigan Deer Tales number 7?
One of the chapters is about the only albino buck that's in state records, the first and only albino buck to make it into state records. There's a chapter about a father and daughter who had an excellent fall. They each took 2 trophy bucks between them. There's a chapter about a UP hunter who's taken more than 100 whitetails. He's over 80 years old and still hunting. There's a chapter about a buck in the UP that lived to be 8.5 years old. It was missed by one hunter on 2 different years, and it was finally taken by another hunter when it was 8.5 years old. That and much more.
8.5 years old for a whitetail. I mean, that's like legendary in Michigan. That's absolutely insane. And of course, that book will be available. You can see Richard and Lucy at the Woods and Waters Show coming up along with that new book. Richard, let's talk about albino whitetails, because I know you've had the opportunity to be very up close with some of those. And there seems to be almost, you know, myth, legend, and so much misinformation about the harvesting of albino whitetails. And I want to get all this out now, because a couple of years ago, we had a young man that harvested a beautiful albino whitetail, and he took a lot of flack for it. You know, yep. We were very, you know, fortunate with that interview that we got a Michigan Association of Broadcasters Award for that interview. But I want to get all the myths and everything else, and I don't care what people poo-poo this whole thing. It is legal to hunt white albino whitetail in Michigan.
Yes. Since 1990, or I forget what year it was, 2000, there was a 20-year period where albino deer were protected from hunters in Michigan. And the DNR eventually found out that regulation is unenforceable, because most albino deer during the fall, especially albino bucks, when their forehead glands are active and their tarsal glands are active during the rut, they're stained brown from those glands. So those deer are not totally white during the fall, making them legal to shoot. And in the chapter on that albino buck that made it into state records, there's a in-depth explanation of why they were protected and why they're no longer protected, that they're now legal for hunters.
See, and I've always found that curious, because so many people, you know, with the misinformation that's out there, I mean, he took a lot of flack for it because, oh, they're protecting this and that. And I guess having been a time where they were, but now, you know, that discoloration from the tarsals and the head glands giving almost that piebald effect.
Exactly.
It really takes that away, and it's a genetic mutation. Am I incorrect on that?
No, you are correct. It is a mutation. It's a recessive genetics that causes albinism. It takes 2 parents, the buck and a doe, that both have albino genetics to produce albino offspring, and that's why they're so rare. But even when albino deer were protected in Michigan, that did not increase the number of albino deer. Even though they are not protected now, we're still going to have very few of them. They're very rare, but they are a unique trophy.
You know, I look at it like a smoky gray turkey or some of the other color forms of other animals, you know, that nobody has a problem taking those.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a great trophy, is a smoky gray.
And piebald deer are another example.
Absolutely.
Piebald deer have been legal every year for hunters in Michigan, and piebalds have varying amounts of white. They're not totally white. They have some brown, and hunters have been routinely taking those deer with no problem, and it shouldn't be any different for albinos.
No, exactly. And, you know, and we took some heat for that interview as well. And, you know, we're just trying to get the correct information out from experts regarding this. And, you know, and to have you here We appreciate that.
Yeah.
And you've got other books. Now, when is your book tour coming up? Because that's usually in the colder months.
Usually in December prior to Christmas, I do a book signing tour throughout southern Michigan, and that usually works out well.
Now, do you have some schedules, some stops planned yet, or are you still working on that?
I normally do book signings in Lansing at Schuler Books in the mall there, mm-hmm. and then Traverse City, I do signings at Jay's in Clare and Gaylord and Barnes & Noble in Brighton. Those are the normal stops and that I do book signings, but there may be some new ones this year.
Now, all that information will be on the new revamped website, richardpsmith.com. You know,
right.
and talk about some of the other books. I mean, you've got so many books. How many total do you have now?
Well, this new book is my 28th book that I've written. There's about a dozen books that are still in print. My black bear hunting book, the second edition of Black Bear Hunting, is the most comprehensive book on the subject on the market today. 384 pages, all color photos, very comprehensive. My fourth edition of Deer Hunting is also one of the most comprehensive books on that subject on the market today. And that's over 400 pages in all color photos. And, of course, the series of Great Michigan Deer Tales, seven books in the series, and Stand Hunting for Whitetails is another book that covers all the tips and techniques to be effective stand hunting, most effective.
Now, one of the books and DVDs, the Field Judging Black Bear, for those coming up on the season, you know, I sat through the DVD and I watched it in the book. I've learned, I haven't been bear hunting in a while, and I really, really, really want to take a Michigan black bear. But, I mean, when you know, shrinkage is something, and I love that term, when it comes to bear hunting. But, you know, I mean, it happens. You see a bear very differently because of how the excitement and things going on. But after you've taken the bear, it's like, oh. What happened?
Yes, that's very common. And many people, going on their first bear hunt, they haven't seen many bears. They don't know how to judge them if they don't have anything to compare it with. And the DVD provides very simple techniques that anybody could use to help judge the bears that they see.
Yeah, it is. It is very important. And you know what? If in Michigan, I mean, things are a bit different. But if you're going to go hunt Canada for the first time, it's a great experience. I truly love bear hunting. It's in my top three, along with waterfowl and turkey.
Yeah,
for hunting. But it's the one thing I've not yet been successful at.
Well, keep trying.
Trust me, I'm not done with that one yet. You know, the hard part's out of the way. The Michigan elk's out of the way, and whitetails and things of that nature. But I think turkey hunting still is probably one of my top favorite things. It's in the spring. I've yet to handle this whole fall turkey thing because it's very different. And that season starts on September 15th as well.
Yeah.
So any plans, you know, you've got the new website out. Any plans before the big Woods and Water show?
No, we're going to be busy picking up the new book. But I did draw a bear license again this year. I'll be hunting during the third hunt in the UP.
Nice.
After the show.
Well, we look forward to hearing from you on that. We want pictures, Richard.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Richard P. Smith, here on Wild Michigan. Find him online, richardpsmith.com. Thanks so much for joining us again. We really appreciate it.
I always enjoy talking to you, Duran.
Absolutely. Tell my best to Lucy as well. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks.
Thank you. Look for the new books, richardpsmith.com, his seventh edition of Great Michigan Deer Tales. Man, that's going to be a great book. All his books are fantastic, and he's so generous with his time to be sharing it. Thanks so much. Thanks so much to Al Stewart as well, and our friends at Conquest Deer Sense, Sense in a Stick, and Liquid Sense VS1 and Evercalm. Look for the ATA-approved checkmark sticker on any sense that you buy. And make sure also you go to wildmichiganradio.com for all of your information as to how to find Lucky Buck and Conquest Sense here on Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Look me up on the internet, the web, if you will, wildmichiganradio.com. If you got questions about the show or comments about the show, love to hear from you. All my contact information is there, wildmichiganradio.com. Whole another hour coming your way.